Welcome to the Birth Lounge Podcast, an empowering space for expecting and new parents to hear candid conversations with experts, support your mental health, and learn the tips and tricks that thousands of parents have used to craft their ideal birth. We will answer all of your questions, the scary ones and the weird ones, to help calm your fears and feel confident going into your birth. I'm going to help you redefine what birth and motherhood looks like and how to embrace your journey. I've intentionally crafted an amazing list of experts to help you navigate pregnancy, explore your birth options, and plan for postpartum so it can be a time of soaking in your tiny human. We're going to go there on all the hard topics so that you can dive into finding your confidence and freeing yourself from fears around childbirth. With almost 10 years of experience in family education and a master's degree in human development and family studies, I created this podcast as a way to share information so parents can make educated and informed decisions about their care during pregnancy and childbirth. This is a birth community driven by evidence-based information and research in hopes to help you explore your options, understand your rights, and know what choices you have along the way. I'm your host, Hee-Hee. Now let's get to the good stuff. Let me ask you something. Have you ever had anxiety about the conversations that are coming up with your provider in your prenatals? Or do you ever leave your appointments and think about all the things that you wish you had said while you're driving home, like kind of after the fact? Maybe you know what you want in labor, but you don't really know how to actually say it to your provider to communicate your goals or your wishes. Or maybe you keep running into the situation where people are saying, well, it's hospital policy, and you don't know how to kind of get out of that situation, but you know you don't have to follow that. There are no have-tos in birth, right? You are free to do whatever you want. I want to make sure that you not only have the data and the science to back up the choices that you're making so that you are making decisions that feel aligned with you, but I also want you to have the words to communicate that with your provider. And so I've put together a PDF guide that has a ton of birth scripts in there, and I'm going to take you through different conversations so that you can see how you can navigate these with your provider depending on your goals and your preferences during your labor. So you can download that at thebirthlounge.com/scripts-4-advocacy. You're going to find the most common conversations that people bring to me to get information and data on, and phrases to help them stay in control of that conversation. So things like big baby, being induced, birthing positions, Pitocin use, prenatal decision, and so many other conversations that you need to know when you are going into your prenatal appointments with your provider so that you can continue to have this collaborative decision-making conversation throughout your pregnancy so that when you're in labor, everybody's already on the same page. People know what to expect. We have a plan, and this is what we're going to do. So download that at thebirthlounge.com/scripts-4-advocacy with hyphens in between scripts for advocacy, and I'll see you in the episode. Bye. Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of the Birth Lounge Podcast. All right, you guys, today is an amazing episode, but also I want to give you a little bit of a heads up. This is a disclaimer. You know, I don't really do trigger warnings because I feel like everyone is responsible for their own triggers, and, you know, it would be impossible for me to actually properly, you know, and accurately choose when to put trigger warnings on which episode because everyone has different triggers. But here's what I will say. Today, we're talking to my friend Katie Spinks, and she is going to be telling her story of Pitocin use, inappropriate Pitocin use, in her birth. And so here's what I want to share with you. If you're not in a place to listen to a story that has birth birth trauma in it, and to listen to a story that has maltreatment from medical providers in it, this is probably not the episode for you today. I invite you to flag this episode, star it, favorite it, and come back to it when you're in a place, in a space, and you have the time to listen to a story like this. It is going to talk about some heavy topics, but I wanted to have Katie on because her story is so common. Her story is a little piece of a lot of us. If you experienced Pitocin in your labor, chances are something in Katie's story is going to resonate with you. If you experience any sort of obstetrical violence or inappropriate Pitocin use, or Pitocin is the cause of your birth trauma, then Katie's story is really going to resonate with you. I am super grateful to have been introduced to Katie. We met online, so it wasn't so much of an introduction, but via the algorithm. And, you know, I've learned so much from Katie. She's going to share her story today, so I'm not going to do that here. But you should definitely check her out online on Instagram and TikTok. You can find her on both platforms by just searching her name, KatieSpinks, Katie Spinks. All right, you guys, I'm very excited for this episode. You know, I want to start by saying Pitocin doesn't deserve to be demonized because it's just a tool in our toolbox, right? Pitocin doesn't actually do the harm. The people behind the medication do. And so I want you to understand that there is an appropriate way to use and times to use Pitocin. I have seen Pitocin do amazing things in labor. I've seen it give people vaginal deliveries that otherwise without Pitocin, we probably would have had a C-section. I have seen Pitocin induce babies that truly needed to be induced because they were going to be better off, healthier on the outside than they were on the inside. And without Pitocin, we might not would have been able to do that. However, here's what I will say. More times in the appropriate use, I have seen Pitocin really fuck up some people and their births. And so with that, I will leave you with what I always say. Pitocin is a tool. We must use it intentionally and with respect, because if we don't, it is a powerful tool that can very easily slip out of our hands and spiral someone's birth. I have an entire Pitocin download for you. You can visit thebirthlounge.com/Pitocin. That's P-I-T-O-C-I-N, Pitocin. Okay, y'all, let's get to it. Katie, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, I'm so excited to have you here today. We connected over social media, and this is actually the first time that you and I are meeting, quote unquote, in real life, like in person. We're on Zoom for everyone listening and for people peeping in on YouTube, but I think today's topic is going to be so informative for a lot of people, and I think that it's going to bring some kind of real life to a situation that a lot of times is talked about in usually a fear-based way. And I think that fear is valid. But a lot of times in prenatals, when our team is talking about Pitocin and Pitocin use, it is generally in order to educate those parents on the appropriate conversations they should be having and getting from their medical providers. And really, it's your medical provider should be having these conversations with you, but we know that not a lot of people get that, right? And so we always get the question from our clients in prenatals is, well, how many times have you seen this? And, you know, they're looking for a way to validate the fear that they're feeling and the statistics that they are learning about. And our team has the pleasure of being able to say, we have never seen this. That is a privilege. And I really do understand that. But
I don't like giving that answer because it almost invalidates it and it makes people feel like this isn't a real thing and that they shouldn't really be scared of Pitocin. And I too don't believe you should be scared of Pitocin, but I believe that a lot of times the medical community overuses it and uses it inappropriately and they are not getting consent. These are not conversations that people are having, you know, from their providers. Their providers are not initiating these conversations to make sure their patients are really actually well informed about the choices and that we're using it in places that it is actually truly needed. And a lot of times that can result in trauma. And so I am so sorry that your birth story is what it is. Like, you deserve so much better. And I think today's conversation is going to hit a lot of people, but I am very grateful that you are so open to sharing your story because I do think there's a lot that everybody can learn from hearing your story, from medical providers to pregnant people to, you know, the moms and the dads and grandparents of supporting people maybe after this happens to them. It is really a whole community thing. It has a ripple effect that a lot of people don't think about. And so today I hope that people walk away understanding that Pitocin use has real consequences. And if we don't use it intentionally and our providers are not keeping us as patients informed, real trauma can truly happen. And I think you and I both share in the mission that we're trying to avoid that for people. So I'm going to be quiet and just welcome to this show. Thank you for sharing. We want to hear your story.
Of course, and I agree with everything you said. The thing that what you said that providers aren't having that conversation with their patients, it's so true. It's very rare I come across a mom who was like, my provider did sit me down. I've had six kids. None of my providers ever told me the consequences. I
Wow.
always wonder what would life be had one person just said, hey, look, I just want to sit you down and talk to you about the possible risks, the possible outcomes, everything that could happen with using it. But not one person did. Six babies, and not one person did. But I can guarantee you, every single one of them was like, yeah, we're just going to use Pitocin. It's fine. Everybody does it. It's safe. That was what I always heard. Let's just give you some Pitocin. It's fine. Let's get you in and out as quick as you can. It's never, well, what's best for your baby and you? It's always, let's do this as quickly as we can. It's just, it's so sad. So many women are consenting to things that they don't understand what they're consenting to, like myself included. I had no idea. And I wish I would have known. I really wish I would have known. It's just, I can't even put into words how sad it is, like how many people really do go through trauma, like you said, because they agree to these things that they don't know. They just don't know. They think that they're going to go in, they're going to have a baby and just leave, and they just don't realize what they're getting themselves into. Because,
A
like you
lot more
said,
than
there
that.
is, yes, it is. And Pitocin is so overused and so misused. Like, even the FDA says, don't use it electively, doctors. Hey, don't use it electively. But doctors are like, man, you're fine. You're 37 weeks. Let's just go on and give you an induction just because. And it's just, you're opening a woman up for a lifetime of trauma. And it's just not fair. It is not fair at all.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. Okay, so what is your walk with Pitocin? What did that look like for you? You mentioned you have a lot of children. What number child was this? And maybe what did even your previous births look like? Why were you given Pitocin? I have so many questions. I want to know all the details.
No, yeah, I'll give you all the details. So Jolene, the one that my daughter that I have all the birth trauma with, she was my fourth child. She was a 39-week elective induction when my provider, because she was due right around January, New Year's Day. So my provider was like, let's just schedule you for New Year's Day because it's a good day. Nobody will be there. You should be the only one in there. And I was naive, trusting my doctor. So I was like, okay, cool. You're telling me it's safe, so let's do it. And I did. And I went in there and, you know, things were fine. They gave me the Pitocin. Things were all right. Obviously, they're painful. Pitocin contractions are painful. But then, like, out of nowhere, I just went into agony, severe pain. It literally felt like somebody took a stick of dynamite and, like, lit it in my abdomen and then just was just going at it. Like, it was the worst agony I've ever felt in my life. And I told my nurse, I was like, something is wrong. Like, this is not, I need an epidural pain. This is not like vaginal pain. I was like, this is in my abdomen and something is wrong. And she's like, oh, you're fine, you're fine. You know, she was horrible. She said I was being dramatic, that this is normal. All people feel pain when they're in labor. And I was like, you know, I understand that. This catastrophe went on for like an hour and a half, I want to say, where I'm just screaming in agony. My husband was even walking in and out trying to find people. He was literally in the hallway. You could hear him. Somebody help her. Somebody help her. This isn't normal. She never screamed like this with any of our other kids. She never did this. Like something is wrong. And this nurse just kept saying, you're being dramatic. You're scaring the other moms. Like you need to calm down. You're just in labor. It's fine. And then I guess I got to 10 centimeters because she did come back in. She checked me. She was like, you just have to push. This is push pain, but there's no doctor here. So I need you just to keep your legs closed. And I was like, no, if this is push pain, I gotta get this baby out. Like I was in agony. So she holds my legs together. She holds a mask over my face because I kept passing out at this point. She even like physically brought my husband over to my bedside and made him shove those ammonia cubes up my nose to keep me from passing out. Because mind you, I was internally bleeding at this point. Jolene's head was like placed right over the opening. So I didn't externally bleed, I internally bled. So her head was blocking all of the blood from going out. It was backing up into me. So while she's sitting there making my husband hold this stuff over my nose to keep me from passing out, this random doctor I've never even met, she walks in, she's holding my birth plan, and she just goes, you know you can't take your placenta home. And I was like, I don't care what you think about my birth plan. I need you to help me. Like, I am dying. I don't care how dramatic you think I'm being. I'm dying. This is not birth pain. And then she looked at it again. She was like, you have to vaccinate your baby. If you want me to deliver your baby, you have to vaccinate your baby. Because we had in there, we didn't want to give her the Hep B vaccine after birth. Like, that was all she was hyper-focused on, was the fact that I wanted my placenta and I didn't want to vaccinate my baby. So, anyways, as I'm still screaming in agony and my contractions are wonky and her heart rate is dropping like crazy, she comes over and she tries to deliver Jolene. And I'm literally pushing so hard. Like I'm pushing my life away and I just cannot get her out. So she pops the vacuum on and it takes her and then two students behind her. They're like pulling on her to get her out. And she didn't come out. The vacuum ended up popping off three times. And by that time, I was just in so much pain. I just looked at my husband and I was like, I'm gonna die. And that was it. I passed out. Like it was the most traumatic thing. Like thinking about it, like it's like hard to breathe sometimes because it was just so traumatic. All this trauma over a drug, all this over a drug, a healthy uterus. I'd never had a C-section, never had an abnormal pap smear, never had anything abnormal with my uterus ever. I had three completely healthy births before Jolene. And then this, they just kept trying to find a reason afterwards why I had it. They were like, oh, you're over 30. Oh, what did they say? They said, you just had a child a couple years ago, so you didn't give your uterus time to heal. And I'm just like, you guys are just, you're looking for a reason. You're looking for fingers to point when we all know what the reason is. You're looking for the pressure to be off your back because you know you messed up. That's all there is to it. So when they did get me into the OR, I don't remember anything after that, after I passed out, after I looked at him and I was just like, I can't take it anymore. He said that they didn't even rush me back there. They just casually like placed everything on my bed and like walked me back there. I was like, that's insane. So the mom passes out after a three pop off vacuum attempt and they just casually walk back. He said I was back there for about 4 hours and that they did scrub him in to go in there. But I guess when they opened me up and they realized that I did in fact have a rupture, they wouldn't let him in and all that. He said he watched through the window and he watched them pull Jolene out and she was as purple and blue as a blueberry. He said after that, he felt like he was going to pass out. So he sat down and he doesn't remember like what happened after that. Eventually a nurse picked him up and took him back to the room and he called his friend to come there. He said he just sat there for a couple hours and just waiting because he said that nobody would tell him anything. He just said that they told him, I just lost a little bit of blood and just needed a C-section incision. And that was it. But mind you, it was like 4 hours. It was just an absolute nightmare. Like when I tell people about my birth story, I'm like, this is a scene from a horror movie. That's what it is. It was bottom of the barrel care, bottom of the barrel compassion, bottom of the barrel everything. Like, an innocent baby lost her life, and for what? For nothing. For what? All this. I feel like that doctor really mistreated me because she was just so angry over my birth plan. The fact that I would not agree to what she wanted. The fact that she said, you have to vaccinate your baby if you want me to deliver her, was just insane. I think about the look on her face all the time, all the time. I'll be doing the dishes and just sitting there like, and I just picture her face reading my birth plan. Yeah, that was my birth story in a nutshell with Jolene. Insane.
Oh my God, Katie, that is like, I like want to cry for you. That's horrible. Yeah.
It really, really was. It really was. I think the scariest part was knowing that something bad was going to happen on the way to the hospital. Like, my husband and I both had those weird intuitions. It just didn't feel right, like, walking in there. We were even 20 minutes late going into my induction because we just sat there in the car. I was like, why do we feel like, I just feel like I shouldn't be having a baby today. Like, this, I don't feel ready. Whereas before, with our last child, we had both of our families there. We were all hanging out. Like, it was such a good time. The vibe was good. The energy was good. And this time it was so dark and it just felt like death was literally on my shoulder. Like, it's hard to explain, but I felt like a dark presence was just right there the whole time. And I wish I had listened to it. But I didn't know, I just trusted the doctors.
I was about to say, what stopped you? Why didn't you guys turn around and say, no, thanks, not today? It just didn't cross your mind, or you didn't know you could, or?
Yeah, I didn't know I could. Honestly, I thought that because the doctor signed us that we know that we were going there, that we had to. I didn't know that I could turn around or anything like that. I just thought that if the doctor says you should be here this day, I should do it. Like, I was so naive before all this. If a doctor had told me that fixing my broken ankle, or that I could fix my broken ankle by jumping off of a bridge into a pool of water, would fix it, I would have done it. I listened to everything they said, everything. I never questioned a thing. Even if it sounded crazy, I was like, you know what? These people have education. They know what they're doing. I have to listen to them. I never questioned anything they said until all this happened. And then it made me realize, from being a medical mom now for almost 4 years, like, how crooked the health industry really is, especially birth, because I've studied birth for almost 4 years now, like, really looked into it. And it's just, it is scary. American obstetrics is scary. Very scary. I had no idea.
It often puts profit over people, and it often looks at that mom and baby as, well, in convenient times, one whole unit, but in other convenient times, two separate units. We never have any consistency. The research is not there. The funding is not there. Most of the policies are either outdated or literally created to control women, right? It's just, yeah, you're right. It's a very antiquated system that really needs an overhaul. And your stories, like yours and your story, are, it is the fuel that gets me up every day. It is the fuel, because had someone told you even a single iota of information, even just one sentence as short as, like, you know, if you ever decided to change your mind on this induction, this one's totally elective. You don't ever have to do anything. I don't want you to feel like you have to do anything. It's my recommendation, but you don't have to if you don't want to. That would have changed your whole life. If somebody would have just said to you, you know, okay, I'm just going to turn down your Pitocin. Totally. Yes. Exactly. What do you wish you had heard? What do you wish that your nurses had said to you, other than listening to you? That's the most obvious. It's just like, can we just fucking listen to women, please, when they say things? Can we just believe them for one time, not 2 hours later? Like, can you just for once take my word and say, okay, I believe you. I can't see what you're talking about, but I believe you that something is wrong. Other than that,
Yes.
what do you wish you had heard?
Let me help you. Let me assess, even anything. Let me assess you. Had they done a simple external ultrasound to be like, you know what? Maybe she really does have some pain. Let's just do this ultrasound. They would have seen all the blood in my abdomen. Had anybody just done something, I agree with you. Had I just wish, I really wish my doctor, when I remember being in his office to schedule my induction, had he been like, okay, I know that for you, you're a non-risk female who's young, you've had kids before, never had any issues, an induction should typically be safe, but I want you to know these are the risks of Pitocin. If you receive this Pitocin, this is possible that this could happen. However, we plan on starting at dose blah, blah, blah. And if you need it, we'll go to dose blah, blah, blah. Not just Pitocin is so safe. Everybody does it. You're low risk. You're fine. See you in a couple of weeks. There was no anything. I had no clue what Pitocin could really do to a woman's body. No clue. I didn't know that the labor from my second and third child hurt so bad because of the Pitocin contractions. I had no clue, but it like all makes sense that this drug is the evil root to so many things in birth that we just can't, or labor that we just can't explain. Like I couldn't explain the really painful contractions, but it makes sense because after Jolene, I had two births and I would not let them even give me an IV. I was like, do not touch me. And the labor, I would literally take like little baby naps in between contractions. Like it hurt, but it wasn't like, holy hell, I feel like I'm gonna throw up and die hurt. It was just, you know, it hurt, but I could talk through it. I could move around through it. I could do things. It was just nowhere near like the other ones were.
And those were
Like the
VBACs,
ones.
right? You had two
Yes,
VBACs
but
after that.
unfortunately, I did. But unfortunately, they both passed because they were so premature. My uterus was really incompetent.
Baby.
And I didn't know that until after I had my hysterectomy, that my uterus was sewn together upside down. So while I was able to get pregnant, I wasn't able to carry to the third trimester. So when they were born, they both died during labor and then passed when they were born. So while they were successful VBACs, they did not make it.
Katie, I'm so sorry. Oh my
A lot
gosh.
of tragedy off of one simple incident. One incident caused a lifetime of tragedy. Not even for me, like you said in the beginning, for everybody around us. Everybody, my parents, my husband's parents, my children. Like my oldest daughter talks about the babies who died in Jolene all the time. My
Yeah.
5-year-old is terrified of getting pregnant. She says all the time, like, what do I have to do to not get pregnant? I don't want to have babies ever. Like, they're terrified to have children. I'm like, no 5-year-old should be terrified to have a baby because they're afraid that this is going to happen to them. Like, that breaks my heart every time I hear her talk about stuff like that. She'll just casually say things like, Mommy, what do I have to do to make sure that I don't have a baby? I want a baby, but I don't want to happen to me what happened to you, or I don't want to have a dead baby. Like she'll just talk about things like that out of nowhere. I'm like, that's her trauma from somebody else's mistake. And it's just not fair to her. It's not fair to everybody.
Yeah, you can see how when we have providers that don't deserve to be providers giving care, whether that be that you don't have the emotional intelligence to separate yourself and your personal beliefs from your clients and the care that you are legally and ethically, morally obligated to give them. And their choices and the respect that comes with that. Oh my goodness, I'm heartbroken for you. I really am. It makes me so sad to think that the system that was ultimately supposed to protect you and had given you good care the first 2 or 3 times, it seems like, did this to you. Did your doctor, can I ask a couple questions about your first birth? Your first couple births? So they were all vaginal deliveries.
Yes.
And you had Pitocin in the second and third, it sounds like. Okay. And were any of them unmedicated?
My So my second child, my son, I did have an epidural that didn't work. So I got it, but it didn't work. And my third one, I just didn't get it at all.
Got it. Okay, so
So
you
my first one
had.
was my truly. Sorry,
Go
go
for
ahead.
it. No, your first one was what?
So my first one, like I did have an epidural. It worked. My doctor, like the whole thing about that birth was beautiful. That was like one of those textbook, like perfect. But she was also very old school and she was very caring and compassionate. Like she cared more about what I thought every hour, every step of the way than she cared about anything else. She was in the field for the right reasons. Like she made sure that I was okay and she listened to everything that I said. I do give her so much credit because she's an amazing doctor. So my first birth was really the only birth that I can say I absolutely loved. Everybody else was just, I was just there to have a baby, basically. I wasn't cared about.
The difference that that kind and compassionate care makes, it literally was the difference for you for loving your birth and just like, I'm just here to have a, I'm just another number to, yeah, I'm just here to have a baby. That's it. What'd you say?
Cow in a meat factory. That's what I call it. That's all I was.
Yeah, it feels very like you're on an assembly line and just, you know, one after the next, after the next, after the next, just here to get standardized care that is basically one size fits all when we know we are not one size fits all. We are all as unique as our fingerprint, like literally and figuratively. Okay, do you know what level your Pitocin was on? And do you think that you having received Pitocin in two births previously impacted your uterine rupture?
So that I honestly don't know if the Pitocin did impact my uterus at all. That's something I'm gonna have to like look into. That's nobody's ever asked that. I never thought of it, to be quite honest.
Yeah,
And I
I don't
really
know
don't
any data about it, but what I do know is that a mom's intuition means a whole hell of a lot. And so I was just wondering
know.
if your
Yeah.
intuition had any sort of you like nudges or anything had nudged you in any direction of kind of knowing where your uterine rupture came from other than Pitocin.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly never thought about it. I don't feel any sort of way. I feel like honestly, if I had to guess, I feel like they did. I feel like they misused it. I feel like because my labor was going a little slow at first, that they just wanted to in and out. Like I said, it was a holiday. It was New Year's Day. It was me and one other person. So it was like they just wanted me in and out. That's how I feel. So they probably just amped it up because there was at one point where I was like, okay, this is fine. I can handle this. And then all of a sudden it was like, holy shit, like who turned on the heat in here? Like it got hot fast. So that's how I feel. They won't tell me. Only one person from the whole room would talk to me the next day. Nobody would answer any of my questions. Nobody said anything. Like I was just left to figure it out. People were terrified to come in my room. There was one girl who came in my room, and she's actually a local, as awkward as that is. She was the only one who would come in to like help me out. She would like take my vitals and help me go to the bathroom, make sure my meds were good and all that. Everybody was like terrified. You could see them all at the station, like looking in my room, like they knew something had gone on, but nobody would come in. No, I liked it. So what it was the nurse who was there, and then the doctor who saved my baby, he did come in to check on me and check on her. And he also called to check on Jolene for about a month after she was in the NICU as well. So there was that one good person. And then the nurse basically came in and she just kind of laughed it off. She was like, oh, that's funny. I teach about uterine rupture to my students. I don't know why I didn't notice it. And at that point, I looked at my husband and I was like, if you don't get her out, I'm gonna figure out how to get up and I'm gonna make her get out. Like she was so, I don't even know the word to describe the way her
Disgusting.
brain was. It was disgusting, pure evil. Pure evil to like laugh about that. And if you teach about that, if you know that's possible, why did you just leave me sitting there to rot? Why did you do that? And that was the last I ever saw of her. I never heard from her. And I honestly have no idea what my dose was whatsoever. I couldn't tell you at all. It's not even in my paperwork because I swifted through that stuff like crazy and I could not find it. Conveniently. Conveniently. I'm sure that if somebody managed to get a hold of it, that it would be an eye opener as to what really happened and when it happened and all that. I really feel like that's what they did. They just amped me up when they should have just left me alone, but they didn't.
Your second and third birth, were they inductions as well?
Amelia was an induction, and Gannon was a partial induction. I had already been like in inconsistent labor. I was already dilating. I was all that. They broke my water, and then his heart rate started to drop. So they did give me a little bit of Pitocin, not a whole lot, but he was in and out real quick. He was I don't want to say he was an induction, but maybe they did give me Pitocin. So I guess if you
I mean, if you're already in
want
labor
to call
too, then it wouldn't have been an
it
induction. Yeah, that would have been like
yeah.
augmentation at that point, even if it was like prodromal labor. You would have just had a little augmentation. So I'm just thinking about, it does seem like the date matters. So one of the things that I know to be true is July 4th is one of the days of the year that has the least number of birthdays because very rarely are inductions scheduled on or the day before July 4th. Christmas is also one of those days. And it makes me think that for all the people who are considering induction, I don't want you to leave this conversation thinking, oh my God, I cannot have Pitocin. Like, it is just like, I cannot have it. There is a time and a place. I mean, Katie, you had two stories that you had Pitocin. It turned out good for you. You didn't know that the contractions were necessarily horrendous because you had nothing else to compare it to. But it, other than that, it was a good story for you. So Pitocin has a time and place. But I think that this shines a really good light on the fact that we have to be cognizant of all the aspects when it comes to induction, not only how we're going to induce or how we're using Pitocin or do we start with a cervical ripener, but we're even picking the time and day and the day intentionally. Don't do it on Christmas Day. Your hospital staff doesn't want to be there. And you know what? That's okay. They're human. It is like more than okay for humans to be sad and be like, this is shitty that I have to work on Christmas. I would be thrilled if we could get home early. That is normal. I'm not going to fault them for that. Now, do I think that it's ethical to let it play into your care? Absolutely not. You have to work the Christmas shift. Be sad about it, but that's where your emotional intelligence comes in. You have to be able to separate, I am sad, but also this person deserves 100% of my time and energy and my focus, like every one of my other clients on any other day of the year. Like, you have to be able to do that. If you can't, it sounds like you need a new career. You cannot be a medical professional and not be able to separate those two because it ends in trauma like this, right? And so it makes me think about the people out there who are considering induction. I don't think you should not consider it, but I think you should be intentional about everything when it comes to your induction.
Stay informed. Information. I always tell people when they're like, oh my God, I'm getting induced. What do I do? And I'm like, if you don't have all the information, then wait until you do. Even if you feel like you don't want to do it, don't do it. I shouldn't have done it. I wish I hadn't done it. I wish I had just waited, but I didn't. You can wait. It's okay to wait another week or two. It's not gonna, tragedy isn't gonna happen. Just make sure you're fully informed, have all the information, have all the talks, and make sure it really is the right thing. Because once you do it, once you start it, you can't go back.
And I think all of this is not going to happen in your prenatal. So had your doctor actually given you that list of risk, likely wouldn't have had time to go over every single one of those risks all the time, but you would have taken that list and you would have gone home and looked up all of them. And then you would have been able to truly decide if Pitocin was really right for you. Which leads me to my next question. Did you know anything about uterine rupture before this? Did you know the signs? Did you know anything, how often it happens, that it was even a possibility? No, nothing. No one
I
ever
knew
spoke to you
nothing.
about it. Oh my
I didn't
gosh.
even know a thing. I didn't even know a uterus could rupture. And then after all this happened, like obviously I've been sharing my story, so like other people have chimed in with their stories. I didn't know a placenta could rupture. I didn't know all these things. I had no idea. I thought that the only time something went bad during labor was because a cord got wrapped around the baby's neck during birth and the baby died. I thought that was it. I was naive. I didn't know. I was ill-educated on it. But now that I know, there's a million things that can go wrong and that everybody should just be aware of, so that way they can just stay on alert, stay in tune with your body. If something doesn't feel right, then you can advocate for yourself and say, hey, you know, I read about uterine rupture. I'm having pain that doesn't feel right. Can somebody check me? Just something. Like, I didn't know any of these things could happen. I had no clue at all.
Yeah. One of the things that comes to mind if you are find yourself in a situation that's similar to this, and you feel like you are being either over medicated or under medicated in some regard, you should tell your providers that you revoke consent. So I revoke my consent for you guys to be giving me this. That is like a key phrase. If you revoke consent, they need to turn that off immediately. For people who are under dose and you feel like you need more, you should be telling them that this is causing you trauma. It is, you need something more. You can let them know that, you're kind of in agony, which are all words that it seems like you used, Katie, and your nursing staff didn't heed your warning. But there is language to get your urgency across. But I think, unfortunately, Katie's situation is a really dim glimpse into the fact that we aren't always listened to as women, especially when it comes to labor. And I feel like, and this is my personal opinion, I don't want anyone listening or watching to feel like this is data backed, because it is not. This little piece that I'm about to share is only purely my opinion, but I feel like people can be on LND for too long and they get desensitized. And instead of seeing, a very scared, fresh mom as someone who's never had a baby before, or she's had three before and this is her fourth one and she's exhibiting some fear, they're so just quick to shut it down or to just label that patient with a variety of labels that, different LND units across the nation have. But I think that you really can kind of wear out your welcome in LND. And so if you are a medical professional, OB, midwife, nurse, who, you find yourself being hardened to your clients or not having that compassion, or you're angry at your clients more days than you leave feeling jazzed up and joy from seeing them, it's probably time to think about just a small pivot. You don't have to get away from moms and babies altogether, but LND is a very special place that you have to have compassion. It is a non-negotiable. And if you don't, you're ruining someone's story. And so if you don't want that weight, then it's time for a little bit of a change, whether that be a change in attitude or a change in perspective or a change in career path. I think it's really, really important, not only in the moment and not only to prevent trauma, but to actually be able to do your job, to listen to women, to bring the energy that women require to be in their birth space. You have to be compassionate. And so just a little note for the medical professionals out there, don't be afraid of self-reflection. It's okay if you have served your time in LND and you should move to postpartum, or you should move to nurse educator, or you should move to childbirth ed educator, or, go online, start your own stuff. It's okay to pivot, you guys. You don't have to be in LND forever, unless your
100%.
compassion is up there forever.
I agree. I fully agree. I think that some nurses and doctors, they're just so desensitized because they're just so used to it that they feel like because the birth prior to them went perfectly fine, they feel like everybody should be like that. Like, I feel like so many of them look at birth as a one size fits all. Like you said, we're not. We all have our own social security numbers for a reason. We are all individuals with different needs, different bodies, different everything. Like, our birth should be treated as if it's special and nobody else has had this kind of birth before. Otherwise, women are going to keep having these horrible experiences where they come home crying, and it's not because they have postpartum, it's because they can't believe that they were there to have the most magical experience. Like, birth is supposed to be magical. And for so many women, it's just not. It leaves them with more pain than they've ever felt, and not even physically, just emotionally and mentally. It's hard when you go in, you're excited. You're like, I'm gonna have a baby. I'm so excited. Like, I'm gonna get my moment. Like, this is gonna be beautiful. And then you leave, and you're just like, wow, I didn't know I was gonna need therapy because of the way my birth went. That's a harsh like pill to swallow when you are so excited and then you just get let down because of somebody else's desensitization to their own career.
Yeah, that's awful. I think you can't be an LND if you don't have compassion. That's the bottom line. If you've become, hardened to the system or your clients or your patients, or you just lost your compassion, it is time to pivot in some regard for sure. I do have two questions. You had mentioned, like, I just wish I had known. I wish somebody had shared with me. So my questions are based on kind of what you wish you had known. My first question is, what do you wish you had asked your provider during all of this? And maybe I think prenatally, if you could go back to prenatal Katie, what would you have her ask your provider?
No, I don't know. Like I said, I never questioned them before.
Mm.
I felt that everything they told me was in my best interest and was true and was honest and was because they cared and all that. So I never felt like I needed to ask anything, honestly. So I don't know. But I do feel like if I had known any sort of risk with induction or Pitocin in general, that maybe I could have asked my own questions like, hey, what do you think will happen if we maybe not induce at 39 weeks and we wait until 40? Or what if we try using the Foley bulb? Or what if we try using something else? Like I could have asked so many more questions, but I was very naive and dull and completely blind to any sort of crookedness in the healthcare field. I thought that every doctor was A1, everybody cared, nobody would ever do anything like this. I listened to everything. So I never felt like I really had to question them. Like if they're like, oh, your baby's growing good, you're good. If you feel okay, then we're good. We'll see you next week. Like I'm like, okay. And there it go, me just walking out, like I'm perfectly fine and everything's perfectly fine. And I really never had any issues with Jolene either. Like she was a really good pregnancy. I never really had any pain. I was active. I had like the most beautiful baby bump. Like I loved it. So I never had any issues or anything to ask questions about. I felt like it was going to be exactly like my other three, like grow the baby, go to the hospital, give the birth, go home. Like I thought it was going to be exactly like that. So I really didn't have any reason to ask any other questions. I just trusted everything that they said. I never thought to even double check or to even go home and look up anything at all. I just trusted them.
I think a lot of people are there, especially with pregnancy, right? This is where many of us enter the system is just. We just kind of willfully follow and trust that they have our best interests at heart. They went to school for this. And, these conversations, I never have them to try and discredit doctors. We need doctors. I'm not saying that doctors are bad. I am saying that conversations that are crucial for people to not have birth trauma aren't happening. It is your provider's responsibility to have that. We as consumers know and understand we're not getting those conversations. And so my job is to say not only bring awareness to you're not getting these conversations, but now what can you do about it? So some things that are on my mind, if you're listening and being like, oh my God, now I definitely want to have a conversation with my provider about these things. Some things that I think are really good for you to ask. Tell me about some bad things that can happen if I use Pitocin. I understand all the benefits. I like know those. Those are all over social media. I see everybody being induced. I get it. I want to know about the risk. What are the things that might happen if I use Pitocin that are rare? I understand they're rare. Ask your provider how often they see those things. How often do you see uterine rupture? And, I'm always encouraging you, don't take wide answers. Don't take like, oh, a couple of years. Okay, well, how many? How many in 12 months, right? Don't take, well, we never really see it. Okay, but how often? In a 1 month span, how many do you see? Okay, in a 6 month span, okay, in a 12 month span. Now you have a good picture of how often they're seeing the things that are considered risk. You should ask them where they start. At what dose do you start? Okay, and how often do you move that up? And in what increments are you going to move that up? Are we doubling it? Are we moving it up 2 or 3 milliunits every time? Are we just adding 1 milliunit every time? If you don't know, you have control over that, you guys. You get to have this conversation and say, say what your preference is. You can have the conversation and say, okay, where do you start? And they say, we start at 2. And you say, I want to start at 1. And they go, oh, we don't really ever see any progress with 1. Okay, great. I'd like to start at 1. And if we don't see any progress, then I'll be open to moving up. But we're not starting with 2 with me. I want to start with 1. Or maybe you do go with 2 and you say, okay, how often do you move it up? And they say, well, we double it every 30 minutes. And you say, no, I don't feel comfortable with that. I'm comfortable with moving it up every 30 minutes, but only by 1. Or I'm comfortable doubling it, but only every hour. Or I'm comfortable moving it up at this rate, this frequency, right? You have control over these things. Katie had mentioned the FDA's recommendations around Pitocin use, and we'll link all of that for you. I'm going to link a couple of different articles and resources for people to be able to learn about Pitocin use, because I mean, Katie has beautiful stories using Pitocin. I've shared good stories using Pitocin. It has a time and a place. The way that we administer it and we use it is really, really, really important. Okay. I think my final question is, you mentioned the most devastating fact that no one came to talk to you after this. No one came to explain anything to you. No one came to offer support or space to ask questions, or literally just another human that was in that room with you that shared in that same experience to say, I am really sorry this happened to you. I know this was not your plan. Other than that, what do you wish they had said to you? What were you looking for? And maybe you didn't know in the moment, but now 4 years later, what did you need in that moment that they could have provided you?
I love that you ask that and that you say 4 years later, because in the moment, I don't know. My mind was everywhere. Like you said, I wouldn't have known what to say. But now what I wish they would have come in there the next day, not even the night and everything, the next day, and just been like, look, you were right when you said that you had all this pain. We were wrong. We should not have ignored you. We should have just done a simple ultrasound to see your blood. We should have taken you more seriously. I wish they would have given a sincere apology. And I wish that they would have given me the reason why it happened, because I left having no clue. I had to wait until I got to the NICU to then figure it out with those doctors. And those doctors weren't there. They didn't know all they could just go off of what they had. I wish somebody had just, not somebody, I wish that nurse and that doctor would have just apologized and given me a sincere apology, not just, oh, I'm so sorry this happened to you. Hope you move on. Like a sincere apology. I'm sorry for holding your legs together. I'm sorry for shoving the ammonia sticks up your nose. I'm sorry for looking at you crooked for wanting to keep your placenta. I'm sorry for having 3 people jump on my back to pull this vacuum off your baby's head, knowing it could kill her. I'm sorry for every wrongdoing that I did. And I want you to know that I will learn from it. I just wanted them to say sorry and to learn from their mistakes. That's it. I feel like had I gotten that, I would have been able to like have closure so much faster than I did, because I spent every single day just waiting for them to call and just say that they were sorry for like a year. Every night before I went to bed, I was like, tonight is going to be the night they're going to call and they're going to say sorry and they're going to treat me like a human. And it never happened. And then after that, I was like, they don't feel bad for what they did. I had to like realize that they don't feel bad. They don't care. In their minds, they did everything that they were supposed to. And I was just another person there to have a baby. That's it. I wish that I'd had a sincere apology and for them to tell me they learned a lesson. That's what I really wish that they would have done.
Man, that is like a sentence I don't know we'll ever hear in medicine. You never, ever find a provider that's willing to say, I'm sorry, because it, you know, it's that whole thing about admitting fault. And that's too bad, because what I have come to learn is exactly what you shared, that if providers are willing to just be a human and say, I am sorry, I messed up, I am sorry, I didn't listen to you, I am sorry, my recommendation was wrong, I'm sorry, we did your C-section too soon, we didn't do it soon enough, whatever it is, people will be able to reason with that and it brings some closure, like you said. It's when the hospital skirts around the truth and gaslights people and makes them feel as if they did something wrong or as if the hospital did nothing. They're at zero fault. The responsibility lies solely in the patient, that people get pissed and they're ready to fuck up the hospital at that point, right? So, you know, I think there is a very interesting crossroad. What hospitals have been teaching doctors to do is actually what lands them in litigation. Whereas if they would bring back just a little bit of humanness and admit them when they were wrong and, you know, just be a human with people, recognize that in that hospital bed is another human and this is not another day at the office for them. This is a pivotal moment in their life. It's part of their new forever. Just be a human, say I'm sorry. Tell them if you're proud of them, if you're proud of them. Tell them, you know, that, you know, things didn't go as they were planned. Tell them the things that are on your heart, and it will almost always avoid litigation, which is weird because that's the opposite of what the hospital thinks. And that's something that really sits with me. Yeah. Yeah.
You're so right. They think that if they tell them, just walk away, it's fine. Like, no, people need closure in order to heal from trauma. Like when you go through a real trauma that causes you PTSD, like you have to have closure. And just somebody, the person who did you wrong telling you sorry, causes so much closure. Like if you're not able to close the door, your trauma goes on for the rest of your life. And just saying sorry, like we'll look at you like we're human. I get it. Doctors, they make mistakes. Everybody does. We're all human. But it takes the fact that if you make a mistake, if you're a human, you own up to it and you apologize. That the person that you did wrong will more than likely see that you are human too. But if you just walk around with your nose held high in the air, like, no, I'm good, I'm perfect, I didn't do anything. That's when people like me, like we do, I get pissed. Like every time I think about that doctor, it just angers me. She's out there walking around like she thinks her shit doesn't stink when it does. And then I have to walk around with this trauma for the rest of my life because I'll never have a closed door. So you're right, the hospital, she's like, shh, quiet, but really they should just say sorry. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to be human.
Yeah, but see, it then in their mind, it gives people ammunition to then take on that litigation and say, well, they admitted that they did something wrong. But in most cases, people aren't interested in suing the hospitals. They really just want that emotional connection. Are you going to run into people who are, you know, litigation happy? Of course you are. They're in every industry. That's just a type of person. But for the most part, people who experience birth trauma, they really just want a little bit of a connection of I'm sorry, right? And that's kind of it. Okay, so did you guys decide to sue the hospital or the doctor? Did you report the hospital or the doctor to anybody or anywhere?
Yes to both. We did try to sue her. We sought out a legal practice who could not make a case out of it because it turns out she lied in my medical records. So then we took that and went to another place to try and sue. The same thing. They said that what they wrote on paper looks like they did everything right and they're not backing down from their story. And you and your husband aren't backing down from your story. And what it's going to come down to, since it's two against two, it's going to come down to what's on that paper. So legally, there's just nothing that we could do. And plus, the time that we spent in lawyers' offices and everything, all that time away from our daughter, whose seconds aren't even guaranteed, it wasn't worth it. We just gave up. We're like, we're spending so much time worrying about winning a dollar, but we have a baby who might not even wake up tomorrow. So we just closed the chapter on that and walked away. I did report her. I don't know if anything ever came about. I did get a letter back. It was like 2 years ago. I've just never opened it. I don't know if I want to know what it says, to be quite honest. I don't feel like even if I look at it, even if it says, yes, we took your report like we did, you know what I mean? I don't feel it's not going to change anything for me because it's not going to be a letter from her apologizing. It's not going to change anything. So I haven't opened it. Maybe one day, but for now, it's just going to stay closed.
Yeah. Gosh, that's, you know, that's so sad. That's what they want. They want to make it so difficult that your average family can't afford to bring a lawsuit against them. It's a bullying tactic. And that's too bad because I think if the focus was truly on patient care and actually making people well. When the hospital did make a true mistake, they would fix it. And no amount of money is ever going to ever even come close to fixing this, not even in the least bit, or take away that experience for you guys. But it would help make it easier for you guys to get the things that you need. And I think, you know, that's tough. It's tough to find lawyers that will take on hospital systems like that. And I think in an ideal world, if money and time away from your daughter weren't a factor, we would bring everybody into a courtroom and, you know, you got to tell the truth there, or you can go to jail too. If you'd like to lie on the stand, go, I mean, go for it. It can be a party. Everyone who's in the OR can party in jail. Right. But it only takes that one person. Yeah. It just takes that one person who says, oh, hell no, I'm not going to jail for you guys. That is not what happened in that birth room. Those medical records are a lie. I'm here to tell you the truth. This is what happens. And then, you know, we hope that the rest of them follow suit. And then the person who actually did the wrongdoing, that doctor, you know, that doctor doesn't deserve to be a doctor. You can't lie on patients like that after something traumatic, because it impacts way more than just your medical license. Doctors are always like, oh, it's my medical license. Yeah, but it's this person's livelihood. They literally have work to report to. They now might need surgery. They now might need mental health counseling. And if all of these practitioners, PFPT, physical therapy, like, if all of these professionals are not getting the real story of what happened, it skews that person's healing. And that just crosses all sorts of boundaries. So this story, yuck, it makes me just so sad, I think, for you and your family, and also all the millions of other people who have experienced something like this and have ultimately been met with resistance and callousness, coldness, a distance from the hospital system instead of an I'm sorry, an apology, and some, you know, some warm compassion, a little bit of an embrace. That's really too bad. Katie, if there were people who were touched by your story today, or unfortunately experienced something similar, or just people wanting to connect for whatever reason, they have questions, they want to talk to you, blah, blah, where can they connect with you?
I'm on TikTok and Instagram. So on TikTok, my name on there is Katie plus Jolene. And then there's a little purple heart and the handicap sign. And I think my username is K_Spinks. And then on Instagram, I'm Katie Spinks, SPINKS. And it's Katie_Spinks_. It's a lot of underscores, but those are my two names. And I am always open to anybody sending me messages. I welcome them all the time. I'm always talking to people that I've never met on there. And it's just really nice to connect with other people just like me, because it's nice to know that I'm not alone.
There is something in knowing that there are other people who experience the things you experience, even when they are a tragedy. That is something else that I have come to learn in birth work, is even when things go really, really bad, A, you're never alone, and B, it just helps to know that you're not alone in this, for sure. Katie, truly, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I think that you have mastered the art of telling your story in a way that informs people but doesn't scare them. I am blown away by your resilience and your commitment to motherhood. You are such an amazing mother, and I can just see it like radiating out of you when you talk about your children. Is there anything else that you want to leave us with?
I could leave you with a novel, but really what I tell people, honestly, from my story, if there's anything that I want anybody to take away from my story, it's number one, no matter what you go through, you're not alone. There's somebody out there in the world who shares the exact same pain you do. And two, don't believe anything that people just tell you, whether it's a doctor, your friend, a neighbor, a person in the grocery store, take what they say to you and research it on your own. Everything that somebody tells you, just research it, especially if it's going to have an impact on you for the rest of your life. And for women, especially women who are being told that they have to be induced, just research everything. Ask your doctor why they won't start with the Foley bulb or the cervical ripeners. Ask all your options. It doesn't hurt to ask questions and to research. Just stay informed, fully informed. Knowledge is power. I love that saying. Knowledge is power because it really is. It can change so many things.
Yeah. That's beautiful. All right. Thank you so much for being here today. Truly, this has been an honor and a joy. And it feels weird to say that because I think the story is so heavy and, filled with trauma that you and Jolene did not deserve. You guys absolutely deserved better. And I'm really sorry that you didn't get it all the way from, it sounds like, from the start through postpartum. You didn't get any sort of resemblance of compassionate, kind care that you deserved. And for that, I am sorry. I wish that you had gotten better care. If there is anybody who is listening on the podcast, head over to YouTube. We've got all our other guests over there, and you can see their faces and check us out there. And if you are watching on YouTube, hello, head over to the podcast. A lot of episodes that aren't on YouTube live over on the podcast in just voice edition. All right, you guys, until next time, bye, y'all. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I truly do value this community and I love hanging out with you. If you found today's episode helpful, share it with a friend. Share it with someone who might also find this information helpful. I'd love to hear what you have to say and read your sweet words on iTunes. You can leave us a review and this helps get this information into the hands of parents who might also benefit from hearing it. If you're interested in joining the Birth Lounge, you can go to thebirthlounge.com. Our blog is linked there. You can find all sorts of free information as well as how to get your access to the Birth Lounge. You can always hang out with me on Instagram as well, at Tranquility by Hehe. Until then, stay educated, stay supported, stay confident.